Never played with a player like that on this team.
Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to an exciting playoff edition of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal, and with me, as always, is the doctor, the big guy, Fred Pfeiffer. How are you, my man?
Living the dream, Mark. I mean, the Bulls are up 3-0. What can be bad when the Bulls are up 3-0? We're on the verge of closing this team out. Hopefully, next game will end it. I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. It's a fantastic time of year with all this playoff basketball. I just can't wait till tomorrow night when we close out the Bucks, and I think it will happen in four straight games. What say you?
Well, I got to say, just in general, first, Fred, I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for asking. And playoff fever.
How are you doing?
Certainly, playoff fever has overtaken me. It's unbelievable, Fred, that every single series, besides the series that we are watching right now, the Clippers and San Antonio Spurs, every single series could end up in a sweep. And a lot of shockers in there, too. I mean, like, you know, you expected Golden State to be up 3-0. But you had then that game yesterday where New Orleans, I don't know if you saw any of this, Fred, but New Orleans was beating the crap out of them. And they were up by, like, 20 points with, like, 6 minutes left. And Golden State came back, and then on a Curry final second shot, sent the game to overtime and just demoralized the Pelicans on overtime. Then you've got Memphis right now up 2-0 on Portland. Both of the games, they beat the crap out of them. Shocking series over there. I picked Portland in that series. They're the higher-seeded team, and to see these blowouts occurring is shocking to me. Houston knocking the crap out of Dallas. I was just telling you about that game, Fred, that I turned it on at halftime, and the score was like I think that Houston had almost 70 points at halftime. Game ended up being 130-127. Dallas giving their best shot right there, but, I mean, that doesn't look like they're going to be able to win a game. Atlanta and Brooklyn, you've actually had somewhat of a decent series, as good as it could be, as well as I think Boston and Cleveland. They've matched up about as good as they could match up against the teams that they're playing. And then the Toronto-Washington series, man, Washington just took another game. Toronto swept Washington during the regular season, and they have yet to win a game in the playoffs. Isn't that unbelievable?
Everything's unbelievable. To me, the most unbelievable accomplishment was that Golden State victory yesterday over New Orleans. I just couldn't believe Curry in the fourth quarter. I mean, as incredible as it was for him to get that rebound who got the rebound? Was it Spites? On Golden State to get that rebound on the missed Curry three and then getting it back to him, and then he nails it. And he got fouled on that shot, too. That's another amazing thing to me. And there were so many fundamental lapses, I thought, in New Orleans to allow that comeback. But that said, seeing Curry in the overtime nail four free throws, just play incredible basketball. That kid is something. I mean, I'm almost willing to say right now, he's my MVP, and I think he could be challenging LeBron for, you know, the best basketball player in the league right now.
I don't know about that. I mean, he still didn't have he still took 29 shots yesterday. He was like 12 for 29. Look, he's a great shooter, he's a great player, but I don't see him ever being Golden State's a really good team. I mean, they're a really good team. And yesterday, I mean, to say the lapses that New Orleans had, they just don't have the talent. I mean, to even get up by that many points, you know, I mean, just at the end of the day, they defended Golden State extremely well. And you can only do that for so long. I mean, talent can only take at the end of the day, talent's going to win out, and it did. But I don't think that they could have done any better than they did. That was their best effort. And I think you've seen Milwaukee give us their best effort. I think yesterday was really their best effort. And the fact that we were able to grind that game out yesterday makes me very confident going into tomorrow that we're going to sweep this series. Did I tell you, Fred, that I had courtside seats pretty much for game two?
Yeah, let's hear a little bit about how that atmosphere was like. I mean, that was probably the more challenging game of the two, I would say. Wouldn't you agree? It was pretty close, I think, till the end. For the most part.
Yeah, I mean, they were beating us at the half, and Derek had a terrible half, but Derek was great in the second half, and, I mean, the atmosphere is absolutely electric, I got to thank my buddy Paul Davis. He's brought it out twice this year. Got me these tame seats against the Clippers a couple months back, where I had the whole razzing what's his face, Austin Rivers. This time I had those same seats against the Bucks. Sitting next to Steve Schoenwald again, by the way, who was wearing like a Bulls jumper. So for those of you who don't know, he's like the marketing. He's the dude that got the lottery
pick.
Ball for Derrick Rose. Yeah, he's the one that was there on lottery night. But anyways, he's like a 70-year-old like dude, like he's like a 70-year-old Jew wearing like a freaking like warm up, like a full on Chicago Bulls warm up. But anywho, the atmosphere was. God bless him for sure, and he's got his championship rings on, man. So this time he was sporting rings. Last time he had a band that was made, like a bracelet that had all the six rings, like engraved in the bracelet. It was so it was so cool. And this time he was actually wearing one of his rings. But it gives you an idea of how great these seats were. I mean, obviously we're right up close. It was really a thrill. I got to say, Fred, I've never been that close to see Derrick Rose before. And for Paul and me. The last time we went to a game together, I believe, the last time we went to a playoff game for sure, was when Derek went down. And, to go from that, it certainly occurred to us going to this game that the last time that him and I had gone to a game was the Derek ACL injury. And, we thought about it long and hard beforehand, and we kind of decided that we weren't the cause of it, and we were able to overcome it and go. But it was a thrill to see him in person, man. I mean, it was really a thrill. And
I blamed it on you.
He's really good. She's really good.
I'm curious to hear, so you were behind the visitor bench, right?
We were right behind the visitor bench, yeah.
What did you think of Jason Kidd in the huddle?
I couldn't really hear him, but he seemed to be pretty intense. I didn't look at it like you were, like, all eyes on Tibbs when we were at the game. And I was much more eyes on the floor during the game. But I wasn't paying a ton of attention to Jason Kidd, but he seemed to be, he seemed to be pretty intense. I couldn't hear him. But also, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to him.
Mm-hmm. So what
I was, we were yelling at Zaja and stuff like that.
What? Oh yeah, obviously that was the game with the dust up with Nico, unfortunately. So I imagine that part of the game got pretty crazy. I mean, the crowd overall, how would you rank it based on other games you've gone to?
I mean, it's so easy to it's a totally different atmosphere when you're down low, and it's just different, and the noises are different, and it's tough to say because like. I've been to huge atmosphere games, like games that stand out in my mind as being electric. Fred, if you remember the Nocioni game, like Nocioni's breakout game, it was game one. Bulls had not made the playoffs in 6 years. I think it was their first game. It was their first playoff game in 6 years. That is like the most electric moment that I can remember. That and like the start of like, some of these Derrick Rose campaigns. But, this certainly seems like it was up there with that. I mean, people were pretty jazzed for the game. I certainly don't feel that vibe around the city. I mean, I was at a bar last night, and you wouldn't even know the Bulls were playing.
Yeah, that kind of makes me sad. I definitely get that.
It's all about the Blackhawks.
I definitely sense that the Blackhawks got a little bit more of a buzz. But then again, I see the numbers come out for the regular season. The Bulls had them beat, I believe, on rating. I'm pretty sure they did on television rating. It was pretty close, but I think they did like a 4.7. The Hawks did a 4.3, so probably within the – a few percentage points, but I would concur and agree with you. I don't know why that is, but there's definitely more of a – well, I guess it's probably because they've won two – can you hear me?
Yeah.
I guess it's probably because they've won two Stanley Cups in the last, 5 years, which is – that's probably the reason why. And in general, I think the atmosphere around the Bulls has been one of disappointment for the past few years, obviously with Derek's injury and, disappointing playoff runs. But, I mean, we're up 3-0 now, and I got tons of good vibes about this team right now, the way Butler's playing, the way, virtually every starter but Noah, I think Gasol's had an excellent series on the defensive end, and he got an excellent game three. Didn't shoot the ball well in game one, but overall he's been fantastic. I think Rose is fantastic in game three. I think Dunleavy had a very underrated game three. I thought he played fantastic in that game. Shot the ball pretty well from three so far in the playoffs. I thought also, too, I mean, Jimmy Butler's just been phenomenal. So, overall, the team has been, I think, definitely starting to come together. You can see it, the talent, shining through and they're playing hard. And, I feel really good about our chances. I really do. I still believe we're the best team in the East, and I think we should come out of the East. And if we don't, it would be a disappointment, in my opinion.
I mean, what's sad is that you know, we are a good team, and because of seeding, you know, we're going to go up against the ultimate competition, I believe, in the next round. And, you know, to think, were we lucky to get to be in the position that we're in? Well, I mean, like, look at Washington right now. I mean, would you want to be playing Washington right now, Fred? I mean, I'm kind of happy that we got the seeding that we got at the end of the day, even if we go up in the second round.
Absolutely not.
Because we got to whop on Milwaukee.
I think it's entirely possible Washington could beat Atlanta. Round two. I mean,
maybe.
They're up 3-0. They won tonight. You know, I watched most of that game, and Paul Pierce had a ton of big shots at the end, a huge three. You know, they're playing with a lot of confidence all of a sudden again. You know, who knows what can happen. It's a shame they wasted DeRozan's effort because he was phenomenal tonight. But I agree with you. Looking back, you know, it probably would have been a much more difficult series if we were playing Washington as opposed to the Bucks, who are tailor-made for our team. They have nobody that really penetrates extremely well. Which always gives the Bulls a problem. You know, to me, the way to beat the Bulls is to extend the big guys, pick and roll them way out, have a guy that can get in the lane and be disruptive, and they don't really have that, you know. And so I think this team is a really good matchup for the Bulls. You know, I'm really hoping we close out in four. But, you know, in a way, too, if it goes a little bit longer, it gives Nico a little bit more time to heal. I think we could, you know, basically, we're going to need him against Cleveland. We don't really need him to beat the Bucks.
No, we don't. And, you know, I mean, really, I mean, Nico's is really the only thing right now that's kind of worrying me. I mean, look, we look about as good as we possibly could look right now. Yeah, I mean, you said it. Milwaukee just doesn't have – they just don't have the Bucks. Part of, you know, excuse the pun, but they just don't have the Bucks. I mean, they don't have – you know, not having Jabari Parker – and even he was just, you know, he was just a rookie. But they really don't have any scoring, and they have no business being the sixth seed in any conference. I mean, they really it's unbelievable that they were able to get the seed that they got, I feel, especially with the talent level that they have. And that, you know, they were in the running. You know, they were close to the amount of wins as, like, Washington is just mind-boggling to me because Washington is so much more talent. Like, if I'm playing NBA 2K, I couldn't be the Milwaukee Bucks, whereas the Washington Wizards, I'd take anyone on with them. They got a lot of talent on that team. They got a lot of stars. So, you know, whatever. Kudos to them for getting this far. Kudos to Jason Kidd. He really did a lot with a little this year. But yeah, they're just not a good team. And I think we're going to beat them in four for sure. I think we're going to close out the series. I think that Boston's going to beat Cleveland as well. Or Boston's going to beat Cleveland. Cleveland's going to beat Boston as well. I mean, they just don't pose enough of a threat. Another team, though, kudos to them for the win total that they got this year. And how about this whole, you know, kind of with this Boston connection, but they trade Rajon Rondo, who was allegedly their best player at the beginning of the year, right? I mean, and they ended up being better without Rajon Rondo. And then you look over at the Mavs series, which all that drama surrounding Rajon Rondo, what a shocker that stuff is over there with him being such a crazy unprofessional. Like, I've never really seen anything like it. And he was supposed to always be kind of like a class dude. But I don't know. That's kind of off topic with us.
Was he really? Well, I think it is a good topic. I've rarely seen anything so pathetic as that. I mean, the guy is just a bum. I've always felt that way. I felt that, you know, he was lucky enough to land on a team with basically three Hall of Famers. And, you know, they kind of carried him and hit a lot of his deficiencies and forced him to work, et cetera. But, I mean, to me, he's done irreparable harm to his reputation. And I'm just praying that the Lakers give him a massive contract. And then next year you'll see Kobe and him team together. And you think it was bad this year? That's going to be a complete and utter disaster next year if you have, you know, a team. The guy, I think somebody told me that today, that he shot 33% from the free throw line this season. How do you shoot 33% as a guard from the free throw line? I how do you shoot 33% from the line as Wilt Chamberlain? I think of all the worst free throw shooters in history. I can't think of many who shot 33%. Let me see if that's true. I'll look it up. Are you there, Anisha?
Yeah.
Let's see what he shot this year. Hold on one second. Yeah, I mean, but just what he did was, to me, inexcusable, Mark. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And like I said, I think that's a forever. Those kind of actions are forever gonna brand you as a loser, because whatever issues you have with your coach, you got to put those behind you during the regular season. So this year he shot, from the free throw line, he shot for Boston, he shot 33%. And then he got traded to Dallas and he shot 45% from the free throw line. I mean, are you serious? Yeah, for the season, he shot 39% from the free throw line. He was 31 of 78. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. I mean, this is a guy who's always been poor, you know, shooting between 50% and 67%. Look at his career high is 64.7% from the free throw line. To me, that's just a big star that this guy never worked hard enough. Free throw shooting is just pure practice, repetition, and hard work. And obviously, he didn't give enough of it. And, you know, there's nothing to say, but, you know, I don't think there's anything much to say besides that, you know, Rajon Rondo's a complete bum. So, you know, whatever, he's a talented player. He's got tons of talent, and he's done good things in the past, but I wouldn't touch that guy with a 10-foot pole. Adding that guy to the team, forget about it. He's a bum.
How old is he?
He's, let's see, when he was born here.
86. So what does that make him? That's late 20s?
He's almost 30 years old. He'd be 29 years old, right?
Yeah, my God. Yeah, I mean, he has not been good in – I'm trying to bring up his stats right now, but, I mean, he hasn't really been good in forever. I mean, what's he doing this season in Dallas? It looks –
Well, I got it right in front 40 of
shooting – yeah, 42%. Yeah.
35% from three. He shot – I mean, just look at the free throw percentage, 45% from the free throw line. You know, let's see, look at his assists. In 46 games, he had, what was his assist totals? 301 assists. You know, okay.
He only made the All-Star team once?
6.5 assists for Dallas. That's what he was averaging in 28 minutes a game. I mean, that's not bad. And for Boston, he was averaging 10 assists this year. You know, obviously, he's always been an assist machine, but I've always kind of felt like, you know, the guy would look to pass and to pick up assists as opposed to sometimes, you know, trying to score almost in a way, like, you know, in a strange way, and it springs up, you know, relevant to the Bulls. Noah is just, he doesn't even look to score anymore. I mean, it's unbelievable how many times in these playoffs, you know, he could be 4 feet from the basket and he's just going to kick it out. He kicked one out to Gasol, I remember, for a three where he was like literally about 3 feet from the basket. He just kicks it out to Gasol for a three. I just want to scream, Jakeem, you got to be some kind of threat, man. You got to put it up and you got to score, especially if you're 4 feet from the basket. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of that in Rajon Rondo. This guy is more, you know, excited about picking up assists as opposed to scoring. Probably afraid about getting fouled and having to go to the free throw line.
Yeah, I mean, for a point guard to be that bad in those key areas is bad. But, you know, just – he always seems so overrated, and just for such a quick, you know, brief period of time, you know, I don't know. I just thought that he was kind of a little shit, you know? So I'm like, in some ways, this is kind of funny to see him really crash this. Because I mean, this to me is a huge stain. And who would want him? And you're absolutely right. If the Lakers sign him to any sizable deal, I'm going to love it because they're locking up all that cap space in a player that's not even really that good anymore. He's not good. I mean, let alone being like some player that deserves some giant contract. Like, he's not even really good. I mean, he's going to be a cancer on any team he signs with because he's going to command some money because he's still Rajon Rondo. Why does that matter? I don't know. But apparently it does. And, I mean, you're right. I mean, he's not that good of a player. But this should be a giant stain. I mean, you're on a team that's built to win. What's the problem? And, you know, Dirk Nowitzki played for Carlisle's going to win. That's the thing. That's Carlisle's team. He's going to win.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially for a team that's, you know, in the Lakers, in a league, that's dominated with good point guards. I don't think he's in the top half anymore. He does, you know, obviously he's a good passer, and he can occasionally play defense when he wants to, and he does some things well on a basketball court. I'm not saying he's garbage, but when you see something like you saw in this playoff series, how he acted, and when it matters most in the playoffs, I mean, that's it to me. I mean, the guy would be dead to me. I wouldn't ever consider adding him to my team. I don't care if he is friends with Kobe, but he is friends with Kobe, and therefore the Lakers will probably add him and spend a ton of money on him to get over there. Might make the team a slight bit better. I really predict, though, it's going to be a complete disaster.
Please. Yeah, and Kobe's at best, you'll be lucky if Kobe plays in a full season this year. I mean, you'll be lucky. You don't need to be pairing people up with Kobe at this point. You know, whatever. The Lakers could do it. If the Lakers want to try to invest into making a team one more time with Kobe, please be my guest because that'll be the funniest freak show. This side, it'll be, you know, that side of Hollywood.
Enough about that. Let's get back to the beloved Bulls. You know what Mike Dunleavy is shooting from three-point percentage over these three games?
What?
55%. excellent job, Mike Dunleavy. 55% over the three games. Derrick Rose is shooting, guess what, from three-point percentage. What do you think Derrick's shooting?
Ooh, well, he's done pretty good the last – he shot 9 threes last night. He was 5 for 9, so I'm going to say 42%.
45%, 45.5. Aaron Brooks at 44.4. And then everybody else has just been horrid. Snell had a couple big shots the other night, but overall he's shooting 33% so far. Mirotić 33%, Butler 28%. So the threes have really come from Dunleavy pretty much primarily, and Rose. And obviously Brooks is still shooting it pretty well at 44%. But, I'd like to see hopefully Snell, hopefully that excellent fourth quarter that he had in game three will hopefully, cause him to keep on getting hotter and getting that percentage to rise. What'd you think of the fact that Snell played, Mark, ahead of Heinrich in Q4? Heinrich only played 6 minutes.
Heinrich was also just coming back, so let's see if that stays. I mean, Snell's hit some big shots. He's big. I mean, he's big. He takes up space. I mean, let's see if he keeps that way. Because look, I mean, I think Heinrich sucks. I think he's a bum at this point of his career. Whatever. 5 minutes, that's fine by me.
Yeah, 6 minutes exactly. Well, he was forward. Of course, every minute he was out there, he 6 minutes he was in -5. So, the team just went in the opposite direction as soon as he stepped on the court. Nobody guards him anymore. His shirt's 37%. The guy's just horrid. And it's good to see that Tibbs is, finally decided to play Snell. And everybody's like, hey, how about that Tibbs playing Snell? Excuse me if I'm not going to compliment Tibbs for, sitting Heinrich and playing Snell when pretty much every knowledgeable fan I've talked to over the last 3 months since January, for the most part, has already decided that would be the right thing to do. It took Tibbs, 4 months to figure this out? I'm supposed to be excited about it? It's a joke how often he played that bum, Heinrich. The guy's done. So, January, he's continuing on the court. We would not have won this game if Heinrich played in the fourth quarter. Snell's threes were huge. He had a huge fourth quarter. And the fact is, if he still had that Heinrich out there, bricking shot after shot, we would not have won that game three. So I think, if anything, Tibbs finally woke up and played Snell. That's not to Tibbs' credit. That's to his detriment that it took him this long to do it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you're absolutely right that it's to his detriment that it's taken him this long to do it. I don't understand it. It's one of my many beefs with him. And you know what? I mean, I'd like to focus on the positives first, because there's a lot of Tibbs talk. I don't know if you saw it today, that there's the talk that Tibbs believes that he's going to get fired at the end of the season. Like, that was the story today. Did you see this?
I did not. I did not hear about it, and I can't believe this would actually be a topic of discussion at this time of the year, but I digress. Go ahead, explain what happened.
I mean, if you go to like any of the sports websites today, like the headlining basketball story was Tibbs's people think that he's going to get fired when the season's over. I mean, pretty much that's the story. There's a big log.
I think we all think that.
This is a national. Yeah, but yes, and you've had big stories come out, but you've certainly had big stories come out during the course of this playoffs, and. It'll be interesting because I think, for Thibodeau's sake, Thibodeau's going to have a good playoff right now, I think, to showcase. I mean, whatever. I think people are going to want him regardless. And I feel like it kind of sucks to think that your coach already has 1 foot out the door, right? I mean, like, you're in the playoffs, and you're a big guy.
This might irritate a lot of our listeners, but I'm going to say this right now. If we do not get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and we fall short again and we lose in the second round to Cleveland, I'm fine with them being fired. I think that this team is underachieved in every sense of the word, and I think he's had a lot to do with it. The bums that he's played, Heinrich with the continual minutes, I think he ruined, for the most part, I think he ruined a potentially extremely valuable player in Doug McDermott. I think he's just done a pretty crappy job overall this season. I'm not going to say crappy. I don't think he's made the most of the talent on this team. And, I'm glad that he decided Snell deserved to play in game three. Snell was 5 of 9 in 26 minutes from three-point line. He was 4 of 8. He was absolutely huge. And like I said before, Heinrich was 0-1, 6 minutes. I don't believe if Heinrich never got hurt, I don't believe that Snell would have even been in the game. So, you know, call me crazy. It's just, that's just what I've seen throughout the year. Heinrich was so incredibly bad the entire season, shooting 37% from the field. He insisted on playing the guy. And, you know, I just, you know, Tibbs has been here 5 years, and I think I'm beginning to believe he's kind of like an A to B guy. You know, Doug Collins type, who can't get us to the promised land. And, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of teeth gnashing and a lot of anger if it does happen, but, you know, same thing happened in Golden State last year. You had an excellent coach in Jackson that brought him to 51 wins in a very difficult West, and people are like, how are we going to get better than this? And you find a guy like Steve Kerr. You got to have faith that, you know, Pax and Gar are going to make the right decision. They've made the right decision, in my opinion, on almost everything they've done. Their first coaching hire was excellent.
Vinny Del Negro.
No, Scott Skiles. Well, hold on a second. Scott Skiles was an excellent choice, number one.
Yeah.
Their second choice was actually Doug Collins, and that was nixed by Jerry Reinsdorf. Then they, you know, so I was fine with that choice. That was an excellent choice. They basically ran out of candidates, and they had to go with this bum Del Negro, who ended up being a complete fraud, and he sucked. But to their credit, they cut him after 2 years. And then the third choice was Tom Thibodeau, which I think we all agree was an excellent choice. So I have complete faith that they'll make the right decision. I really, though, you know, haven't been happy with a lot of the minutes issue. It's a massive issue. So I like Tibbs. You know, he's a great coach. I'm not going to deny that. But I also ain't going to shed a tear if we underachieve again, because I think for the most part he's underachieved in the playoffs.
Well, it's a tough call because, he's had to deal with a lot. It's a tough call. I mean, like last year you could say potentially that we did, but, you know, what, the Wizards are a good team. And, I mean, I think they're showing it now. I mean, it's mostly a lot of the same guys. You know, they're a tough team. And the year before that, I got to say that we probably overachieved. I mean, we got past the Nets and went to the second round. That was,
technical points. Every time Gasol touches the ball in the post in this series, they send an aggressive double team. It took us three full games to figure out that we should probably have Dunleavy on the same side as Gasol when he gets the ball in the post, number one. Number two, anytime you have a player who gets the ball and you have a double team come in and you have a skilled – the guy who's getting double teamed is Paul Gasol, and he's as skilled a passer as Paul Gasol, and you neglect to punish that for the most part for the three games. That's on the coach. That's inexcusable that you haven't figured out yet how to punish an aggressive double team in the post. And I've said this time and time again. Now, the last game, Rose punished it. Rose, it's an insult to Derrick Rose. And they showed it on tape that he's been single covered for most of the series. And it was actually a time when Rose was off the three-point line. He threw it down to Gasol, and his man left him to double Gasol. What is that saying to Derrick Rose? What did Derrick do? Gasol threw it back out to him, and he hit the three. But there's no way on earth that Derrick Rose should be happy about, you know, being single covered when other guys on his team are being double covered. And if you're going to single cover Derrick Rose and double cover another player on the court, you are going to get destroyed, or you should get destroyed every time. That's exactly what happened in game three. But
Jesus,
I am not happy about the way they've been unable to take advantage of the Gasol double teams in the post.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And, I mean, that's especially when you have so few three-point shooters on this team, you should be making sure that your best three-point shooter is on the same side as Paul Gasol.
Yeah, the thing about Paul Gasol, he took a lot of heat for his defense. His defense during the regular season, his defense in this playoffs has been stellar. He was a plus 18 last night again. He's been plus on the plus minus for every game in the series. He's led the team in two out of three in plus and plus minus. Last night, he's a plus 18, 6 of 10 from the field in 41 minutes, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, 17 points, and he had 14 boards, 5 assists. What does the guy he's guarding do? Pachulia, 19 minutes, 1 of 5, minus 18 in the court. He had 6 rebounds and 2 points. He was thoroughly dominated by Gasol. You know, so everybody wants to hate on him for his defense. He had 3 block shots last night. Excuse me. How many block shots did he have? Gasol had 2 block shots last night. He's been excellent. He's been a blocking machine in this series. I can't say enough good stuff about him on the defensive end and offensive end. Gasol has been worth every dime in this series so far.
And how about the play of Derrick Rose? I mean, we haven't really talked about it yet, but he has just been, I mean, he's been stellar. He's averaging 24 points a game, shooting 47%, shooting 45% from three, 92% from the line, getting to the line about five times a game. He's really brought, I mean, look, it's three games, but you got to say, other than, he's been pretty consistent, Fred. I mean, other than the first half of the game two, he's been pretty good. And even game two, his stat line, you know, he had a really bad first half. He was 0 for 5. But to end the game, 4 for 14, he still had 15 points. He still got the line five times. And he hit a couple big threes in the second half. Like, he still was very effective in that game. I mean, but then the other two games, he's been huge throughout. I mean, you talk about his performance last night, Fred, and that's, I mean, that's some of the best Derrick Rose we've seen. I mean, he had 34 points last night, 5 for 9 from 3. He hit some really big threes. Good threes, and he's zipping around him. He's driving to the basket, and he's making it look easy. I mean, you're almost starting to take it for granted again. You're like, oh man, like, he's doing like crazy things that I don't know if you really that if I thought that he could still do. He looks like he's
a star.
He really turned it on, man. I mean, like, to go from being injured for all that time and then to come back and be pretty effective right out of the gate, and then to go right into the playoffs and to be playing like this, Jesus, this is better than he's played all year.
He's been stellar. Looks extremely quick, extremely fast. He's been hitting the three. I mean, he looks incredible, and I think it's helped that Dunleavy's been shooting the three so incredibly well to really spread the floor. Use Gasol. The Bulls use Gasol as a stretch five when he's on the floor. That lineup that really killed it in the second quarter yesterday was the Taj, Gasol, Butler, Dunleavy, Rose lineup. And that lineup just absolutely killed, and it's been killing pretty much for this entire series. I can't say enough about Derek. I'm so glad he shut up so many of the haters. And exactly what I had said that he'd been doing, which is kind of like holding back a little bit, not being as reckless during the regular season, especially in the first three quarters, to kind of save himself from the postseason. Well, that looks exactly like what he's done, and it's been very effective, and I'm happy he's done it. Because I don't think he would look as good right now if he basically put himself on the line for every regular season game. The guy's been awesome. He's been absolutely awesome. And if Derrick Rose keeps on playing at this, you know, approaching an MVP level, there's no team in the NBA that you can definitely say the Bulls can't beat. They can beat anybody. They can win the title if he keeps on playing at this level. You know, that's the big question, right? Are the other guys going to pick him up? Yep. Is Butler still going to play like he did in game two? He was 8-20 last night. He played 53 minutes last night. But he was 1-7 from three, but 7-8 from the free throw line. And he was a +8 for the game. So, you know, Butler has been stellar, I thought, for the most part in the series, playing a huge amount of minutes on both ends of the court. He's been phenomenal. He got literally in Rose, Butler, Gasol, and even Dunleavy, I would add to this, have guys that have just played excellent basketball. Excellent basketball. And they deserve to be commended. And, you know, if they keep this up, having three to four key guys just playing at a high level, there's very few teams that could beat the Bulls.
You're right, man. And I got to say, just watching Derek play like this right now is just, it's so fun. And it's so beautiful to finally be about the basketball again and to be watching consistent, great basketball from this player that we've waited so long to see. And it's just, it would be a shame if we don't come out and, you know, pound on Cleveland in the next series and make it a really good series, because I've been waiting for this for years now, and it looks like maybe finally we're going to be able to see a healthy Derrick Rose, you know, go up and try to carve apart LeBron with a good team around him. And, you know, Butler certainly hasn't been this consistent. I mean, everybody's played extremely well throughout. We have to keep in mind it is the Milwaukee Bucks, but the Bucks are a great defensive team. That's the one thing that got them there. I think they're the third best defensive team in the league. So, if anything, you'd think that they would be slowing down our guards a little bit, but our backcourt right now is playing great. They're averaging about 50 points between the two of them. I mean, I just don't see – when you talk about matchups, I mean, if Derek plays like this and Jimmy keeps playing the way that he's played, you might not have the best player in each of the series that you're in, but you'd have the best player in a lot of the series that you're in. But, you know, maybe against the Cleveland, you obviously may not have the best player on the floor, but – you know, we've got the bigs. We've got the talent down low. I mean, but there's a lot of talent on Cleveland, too. But outside of that, yeah, man. I mean, I think that if we could beat Cleveland, we could compete with anyone. We might have the talent to do it this year. It's the first year I've certainly had any inkling of that in this whole Derrick Rose saga, though I still don't think the Bulls are going to win the next series. My money's still on Cleveland.
You know, I think, you know, obviously LBJ's the best, if not the best, second best player on the planet. I mean, I think most people would say he's the best player on the planet, and I would agree. And you know, Curry's right there, and Curry's having an excellent season. But you know, probably LeBron is the best. If Butler can keep on playing though, at this high level, and he's an excellent defender, if he can almost like make it, you know, almost a wash with LeBron, I feel Rose can actually. He always seems to pick up his game when he's playing Irving, and if they could just, you know, kind of basically balance each other out and have that be a wash, and then you kind of hope and pray that Noah could approach his old self and you know, almost make a wash with Love. I think Love's that matchup is going to be tough for Joakim, and I think that Love might, you know, have the better of that matchup. But after those three big guys on Cleveland, I think the Bulls have an advantage in almost every position. You know, and from basically from 4 to 8, I think the Bulls are much better. And you also have the wild card Nurse that you can, you know, play like an all-star at certain times, and hopefully they'll be healthy. So I'm really looking forward to that series. I really think the Bulls can do some damage in that series.
Oh, man. I just don't know. I mean, you know what? The one thing that makes me think about it is that I felt like Cleveland played extremely well when we played them last time. They only beat us by 5 points without Derek. And J.R. Smith was a super guy. Like, some of the threes that they hit in that game, they were just on. And there was no way at halftime I knew that we were going to win that game. I mean, we knew we were going to lose at halftime because they were just hitting ridiculous shots.
J.R. Smith had a miracle shot before half. Irving had a ridiculous shot before the end of the first quarter. He also had a half-court shot. I mean, they had basically 3 or 4 miracle shots that will not happen again. I think
J.R. Smith was like 8 for 8 from 3. Like, it was unbelievable. That won't happen. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely evenly matched. And I really think that the Bulls, I mean, I really think they could beat that team. I really do. You know, you just got to go out there and make it happen and pull one in Cleveland and, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I really do believe this team. I mean, you look position, the Bulls have the most talent from 1 to 8. More talent than any team in the East, and I think almost in the NBA.
Yeah, but it's just that so far we don't have that it guy that can take that. We
got three of them.
Well,
you got Jimmy
Butler,
Derrick Rose, and you got
Butler's not though. Butler's not like a James Harden type. Butler's not that kind of a player.
Well, he was an it guy,
very good all around player. Yeah, but he's not day in day. I'm always going to trust the team that has the guy that you can go to and always count on to get buckets. And the Cavs have that. And, you know, there's not a lot of guys in the league that are like that, but it seems to me like the guys that are in the league generally have the better of guys that, you know, that aren't like that. And the fact is just so far this year the Bulls have not shown me consistency. Now, they're playing really well against a bad team right now. So we'll see who they really are in the next round. And could they maybe have the talent? Maybe. But I still have not seen enough to think that they do. We're seeing them exceed against a crappy team.
It's a tough call, Mark. I mean, I think this team could beat anybody. I know everybody's been saying I've been smoking the C-Red and I sound ridiculous, but I've felt this way the entire year. They just never really played up to their ability, and I think now it's the playoffs. Every guy's putting it all on the line. And the talent is starting to shine through. And you're seeing Gasol do things defensively that he wasn't able to do all year. You're seeing, you know, other guys step up at opportune times and have a tremendous amount of talent like Tony Snell. And, you know, Taj Gibson, I thought, overall has played excellent in the series so far. It's just such a talented team. And step back and look at it. And Nurkic, we haven't even talked about that. I mean, he really, you know, unfortunately got injured. And he wasn't doing, you know, great. He was shooting 35% for the series and 33%. But, I mean, you saw just some fantastic flashes from the kid, like the one before the end of the quarter where he faked the guy up. I think it was in game 2 and then hit a nice shot with his left hand. There's very few things that guy cannot do on a basketball court. So this team is loaded with talent. I think, you know, until they prove us wrong, until I start in the playoffs at least, feeling like they're going to, you know, they can't. I'm going to start believing in this team. I think everybody should. Because they've done nothing so far to make you say, wow, the Bulls can't win a title so far in the playoffs.
No, and I think it's really interesting, the stakes of this next series for Derrick Rose. I mean, you know, Derrick has really been crapped on, especially since the last knee injury. I mean, all year, people have really not given him the respect of being one of the better players in the NBA. In fact, he was asked recently, do you still consider yourself one of the best players in the NBA? And he said, yes. And one of the reporters in the room was like, still? Like, I mean, it was just so rude and backslapping. It's like, damn right he thinks that he's still one of the best players in the league. And now the public doesn't necessarily think that right now. But you're going up against Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie Irving right now, next to Russell Westbrook, had as much pub as anybody in the league this season with how good he's been. So, I mean, this is where you could shut people up. I mean, if the Bulls can come out and battle Cleveland and Derrick Rose can beat Kyrie Irving, there is a chance that Derrick, in my opinion, could really reestablish his career in one series. I mean, literally in one series.
Yeah. I mean,
come out and be Superman. You want your shoes to sell? That's the way to sell shoes.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Right, like I said, I think it's entirely possible. All right, man. I got to hit the road.
Well, can I one more thing?
Sure.
Is there a crazier series than the Clippers-San Antonio series? First of all, the Clippers-San Antonio series is the only series so far where both teams have at least won a game, which is insane. But the first game, you heard people on the radio after Game 1. The Clippers blew out the Spurs in Game 1, blew them out. On the radio the next day, people were saying how the Spurs were done, the Spurs were done, the Spurs were done. Spurs come back and beat the Clippers in Game 2, and now they're absolutely destroying them in Game 3. Destroying them. I mean, they're about to win by like 30 points. This, first of all, two things. First of all, never judge a team after a first game. I mean, you always think that this team's on the ropes, and then they come out and they prove you wrong. I mean, like, they look terrible in Game 1, and then to come back and just dominate the series is insane. But what if the LA Clippers go out in the first round? What if Chris Paul's turning, like, Chris Paul's getting towards, you know, he'll start declining soon. I mean, he's getting towards that point. And it's like, what if the Clippers never really get past the first, I mean, have they gotten out of the first round?
The Clippers?
They made the second round last year, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They haven't made the Western Conference Finals, though.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I mean, they got out of the first round, too, when I believe Brown was coaching them, Larry Brown, and I can't remember what year it was. And it's not like they haven't had any success. I mean, they were, in this last year, but I agree.
But just this team, I'm saying. This team, this Clippers team.
They're not deep enough. I mean, that's the problem. They just have no bench. And you could tell, I think they ran out of gas in the last game. And I know, it was a tough way for them to lose that game. You know, Griffin, basically Blake took a lot of the heat for losing the game. But I thought he played overall for the first three quarters just incredible. And it's been a fantastic series. I mean, Duncan last night was incredible in that first half. I think he was 8-9 shooting, just hitting everything, and he was playing again like he's 35, or 30 years old. I've really enjoyed that series so far. It's been a really fascinating series, and I think I said these are going to be the Spurs or Golden State, but I did not expect this series to be as rough as it has been so far. What say you?
Which series? You're talking about
the Clippers and
Spurs.
Yeah,
first have two such lopsided games, but I kind of had it on in the background, especially while we've been doing this show. But I mean, they just destroyed them. I mean, the minute that I turned on the game, it was like halftime, and the Spurs were up by like 15 points. So I mean, the Clippers certainly came out with no energy tonight. I think that it's Chris Paul could be one of the most overrated point guards ever because everybody, he's this champion to everyone, and yet he really hasn't gotten out. I don't think he's gotten to the conference finals ever in his career. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think he's ever gotten to a conference finals. And you might be seeing him go out in the first round this year. I mean, the Clippers have been about as talented as any team in the league. And, they're certainly not a contending team in the West. They don't seem like they are. And, if they lose this series, to me, you're going to have to make I mean, does it, like, until we see who the next coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder are, but we can assume that the Oklahoma City Thunder probably, you know, part of that, like, upper tier. But besides that and Golden State, I think when you're talking about the tier, the creme de la creme of the West, you have, like, Golden State in kind of a class of its own, it seems like, right now. But we're going to put the Spurs in there, too, because they won the championship last year. And then everyone else. It doesn't really seem like there's any really dominant team, and the Clippers seem to fall into that category.
Yeah. I just feel the West is such a juggernaut. I mean, if the Clippers were in the East, let's be honest, there's a good chance they'd probably come out of the East. It's just you have so many good teams in the West, and when you look at a team like Golden State, and you look at a team like, you know, even Oklahoma City doesn't even make the playoffs. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, but Oklahoma City didn't have Durant the whole year. So, yeah, I mean,
but they still had Russell Westbrook, and, you know, who was an MVP candidate, and they didn't even make the playoffs. You know, they're still incredibly talented, too. I mean, Oklahoma City didn't make the playoffs. Is there anybody who really believes that if Oklahoma City, even sans Durant, minus Durant, if they were in the East, they wouldn't make the playoffs? Oklahoma City's not better than the Brooklyn Nets? Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know,
sure.
So, I mean, you just
look at
the
saying they wouldn't make the playoffs.
The
but
Clippers
Oklahoma
would be
City...
a one seed or two seed in the East, and they'd more than likely come out probably in the last, you know, and then if they just picked up the team, put them in the East, they'd be in the playoffs. I mean, in the finals.
Oh, for sure. But, are they better than Atlanta? Maybe. I mean, you know what? I don't think until I see Atlanta win in the playoffs, I'm not going to consider much from them. And, you know, when you're in the East beating up on teams, I mean, it makes a huge difference. I mean, when we're beating – so many of the teams that we play on a nightly basis are sub-500 and, you know, are just crappy teams in general. You're right. I mean, it just it changes everything. If we were in the West, Fred, I don't know if we would have made the playoffs. Like, I think we probably would have made the playoffs in the West, but it's a crapshoot. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
First,
yeah.
Wins alone, they would have, but – you'd be playing a lot of those Western Conference teams night in and night out who our win record – we would probably have under 50 wins.
Yeah. Oh, it would definitely be under 50 wins. I mean, if you're playing 52 games against the – you know, for those who don't know, the Bulls are in the East, so they have 52 games against the Eastern Conference teams, 30 against the West. If you're in the West, you play 52 against the Western Conference and 30 against the East. That's a huge deal. I mean, it's 22 more games against subpar opponents. That's going to affect your record in a positive fashion, or it should. Bulls are kind of unique in that they've played so crappy against so many bad teams this year. You know, I mean, if you look at it, the Bulls have probably played better against the better teams and worse against the worse teams. You know, I think we beat every team in the West, right? I believe so. And
I believe we have.
Atlanta was, I think, the only team we didn't beat this year until the last game of the season. So I think we beat every team in the NBA. I believe so. I'd have to look that up and confirm that. But so, I mean...
I mean, honestly, there's no teams in the West. Other than Los Angeles and Minnesota, I don't think there are any teams in the West where if you saw them on your schedule, you know, you'd at least be like, okay, I have to wake up for them. I mean, look at the Sacramento Kings. The Sacramento Kings seem like a team that won more than 29 games. Like, they just do, because they played better competition throughout the entire year. They only won 29 games, but they could beat you on any given night. They've got DeMarcus Cousins. Denver doesn't scare me. Change. You know what? No, Utah doesn't really scare me. But, like, once you get to, like, Phoenix, I don't know. Like, I guess not really. Because, like, okay, so the bottom team in the West had 45 wins. That was New Orleans. That's the 8th seed, 45 wins. Bottom team in the East, 38. But I think that you still have a lot of, like, I mean, the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Lakers and the Timberwolves, and the Kings, too. They only had 29 games. I mean, those are all crappy teams. You see them on the schedule, you're like, whatever. I mean, I get to go play the Phoenix Suns. You know, go play the Jazz, go play the Suns. They're not very good. That's fine. Right? I mean, like, what's so – I guess in our conference, it's – I mean, because you had injuries on the Heat, but and the Pacers, too. But, like, I think you go almost as deep in the East. I mean, you've got three legit teams in the – you've got four with the Wizards. But I think that by next year, once you've got, like, the Heat healthy and the Pacers healthy, you're going to go 6-7 deep in the East. I mean, I don't think the East is as bad as people make it out to be.
No, it's bad. It is as bad as people make it out to be. I mean, it is absolutely as bad. I think the West is far superior in the teams overall. I mean, look at the Bulls. We got destroyed by Sacramento at Sacramento. I think we lost to Denver, if I recall. Gosh, did we? I believe so this year. You know, I mean, I know there are just two examples. You could point to other examples where we, to me, it's clear the East is far superior. I mean, the West is far superior. But anyhow.
As far as, like, really crap teams, though, the East, as far as the bottom of the bottom, you have just as many bottom feeders in the West. Because in the East, you've got the Knicks and the 76ers. But after that, Orlando won 25 games. The Pistons won 32. I mean, the Pistons were a moderate team, wouldn't you say? Like, they were okay.
Yeah, but look at the best team. I'm just saying, look at the best teams in the West. They're better than the teams in the East. I mean, the best teams in the East are Cleveland, the Bulls, and Atlanta. The best teams in the West are Golden State, Clippers, Spurs. I mean, overall, those three teams are far superior to the three teams I just mentioned. I mean, if you had to rank them in order...
Dallas at 50 wins. How about that?
Yeah. Bulls. The Bulls would probably be. I mean, rank them in order. Who's the best teams? Golden State, San Antonio. I might go
Houston,
Cleveland. Next.
Oh, okay. You're ranking them. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
Golden State, Houston. Golden State, San Antonio. I would agree with those two. And then Cleveland. I would agree. And then maybe Houston.
I think the Clippers are. Probably Atlanta. Better than Houston. I think I'd take the Clippers out of Houston. Gosh, how would you rank these? I'm trying to.
Both of them were tied.
Let's take the top 10 teams in the NBA. How would you rank them right now? I believe the Bulls are going to come out of the East, but you know, right now you can't rank them ahead of Cleveland because obviously the deeds haven't been done. Number one is Golden State. Number two is San Antonio. I think we both agree.
Yes. Yeah.
And then to me, there's like a massive gulf. You know, it's like
I don't know.
I think
they're good. Cleveland's good. I don't know how big that gulf is. If they beat us, they're good. I mean, they're a good team.
No, I just feel that those two teams are just clearly better in by a wide margin than anybody else. But let's just say the gulf is smaller than you know, for argument's sake. The third team's Cleveland, we both agree there.
Third team's Cleveland.
Right.
Then I would go west after that with the Rockets and the Clippers, for sure.
I would go Clippers. They're all kind of bunched in together, right? I think I put...
Atlanta's probably better than the Trailblazers. There's a gulf between the Clippers and the Blazers. In the west... the Warriors are kind of in a class of their own right now. And then you've got that second tier, which is kind of the Rockets and the Clippers and the Spurs. And then you've got, like, a big gulf, I believe, you have 56 wins with the Rockets and Clippers. They both had 56 wins. Then you have 51 wins with the Trailblazers, but they're fourth because they won their conference. They won their division. But that's a huge drop to 51. And you see Portland's getting smushed in the series against the Grizzlies right now. The Grizzlies look like a hell of a team. So before we get to you're going to have to put Atlanta higher than us, right? So I'm already down. You're saying top 10. So we're down right now to that was four. So this is five. And I would say maybe five right now might be the Hawks. I think that they've probably shown it.
I would disagree. I think Memphis is better than the Hawks. I think the Clippers are better than the Hawks. Obviously, Golden State, San Antonio.
I put Clippers above them.
I would probably put Dallas right there, tied with the Hawks, and actually Portland, too. Those three teams, I kind of put all in the same arena. And then the Bulls, too, like right there, too. So you got three teams, you know, in the top 10, maybe, in five and seven from the West. I mean,
well, but you do have a 45-win team. The eighth seed, the New Orleans Pelicans, only had 45 wins. Now, that's still a 54% winning percentage compared to the East, where I believe that there was a team that was – I do believe that there was an under 500 team that made it. So the Brooklyn Nets are 38-44, 46% winning percentage. But there's a huge gap. After you get past Dallas, there's a giant drop. And now next season, when the Oklahoma City Thunder are healthy again, God willing, I'm imagining you're going to have eight legit teams in the Western Conference once again. But at the
absolutely.
Moment,
I mean, Oklahoma City is, it with Bryant healthy, I mean, they're probably right there with the top three. I would put them there. They're right there with Golden State and San Antonio.
It'll be interesting to see who they get as their coach, because this is a big coach. It's a big coach. I mean, this is it. You get one shot, I have to think, really at this now. You know, they gotta prove that these players aren't getting any younger, and they gotta prove that they've got it. And you know, you've had bad luck this year, obviously, but Westbrook showed how great he is. And if Durant comes back next year, there's going to be really high expectations on this team. They had talent this year. They had the talent to do a lot if Durant had been there. And, you know, it's a shame that they didn't make the playoffs, because they should have made the playoffs. It feels like they should have made the playoffs, and they would have gotten crushed in the first round by whoever they played. But they should have made the playoffs just regardless. And I wish they redid the playoff seeding so that at least you didn't have these subpar teams in the East, these sub-500 teams making the playoffs.
Think about it. Oklahoma State with Westbrook was battling for a playoff spot, didn't make it. Who was battling in the East? Indiana? I mean, are you serious?
Miami?
I mean, those teams suck. It's like night and day. I'd be curious, though, for everybody to send me your top 10. Give me your top 10, and I'd be shocked if anybody has four East teams in the top 10. At best, you should have three and seven in the West.
Wait a minute, though. Wait a minute. I will say, God, it's just the Wizards seem to be really talented, but they only had 46 wins. And that's, you know, when you're looking at the West, and that 45 wins is what New Orleans had, and they were the eighth seed in the West. I mean, to be in the playoffs in the West, you really need to be close to a 50-win team, especially to be a consistent playoff
there's
threat.
There's seven teams ahead of – all you need is seven ahead of Washington, right? Because – if there's the top 10 teams, the three best teams in the East are the Bulls, Atlanta, Cleveland. Can you name seven teams in the West better than Washington? The answer is unequivocally yes.
Is New Orleans better than Washington?
You don't need New Orleans. Take the top seven
I know.
Teams in the West.
I'm just saying, though, are they?
I think those two teams are pretty equal. I would probably take, just because of Davis, I'd probably take New Orleans. I mean, he's clearly the best player on both teams.
Yeah, and they won 45 games in the West compared to 46 in the East, but I feel like the Wizards have a lot more talent and would win in a seven-game series. Now, Dallas is definitely better than the Wizards.
Absolutely they are. 100% they are. Even with the breakdown, Rondo.
It's sad, because Dallas just doesn't seem like they're that good anymore, but it's not that they're not good. They make the playoffs every year in the very tough Western Conference. It's just that, unfortunately, Dirk Nowitzki's not one of the best. He's a great player, but he's just... when he's your best player, you're not going to be winning titles anymore. Because, I mean, there's just better players out there at this point. But, you know, it's just crazy. Because you're just seeing this ultra... the franchise has been pretty damn good the last handful of years. But they're, like, going out in the first round, you know? They're getting crushed in the first round against the Rockets this year. And, I mean, the Rockets are certainly showing that they're a superior team.
I think they have 12 out of the last 15 seasons of 50-plus wins. Some ridiculous number. I mean, the Bulls had 50 wins this year, and then they had, you know, the 2 years where they won 50 in the strike-shortened season and then the 60 wins. But outside of that, they haven't, you know, seen that since the Jordan era. So the level of consistency with Dallas is, you know, pretty solid. A lot of those teams in the West, I mean, just have been good for quite a while. San Antonio, you know, Clippers now for a few years. But, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt the West is superior. So, all right, man, I got to hit the road.
Well, Fred, as always, it's been a good time. I am excited to watch the Bulls sweep the series tomorrow, as we expect. And, hey, I'm excited for what's around the corner, man. This is what we've been waiting for all year. I wish we had a little bit more time to prepare. I wish everybody was healthy. But, hey, Rose is playing good right now. It's great to see the resurrection of this guy who has been really – the focus of this podcast since pretty much its inception. I mean, the first 2 years, I guess he wasn't here, but like just to be able to say good things about him, my God, finally, it's just a beautiful thing. Let's hope that this continues into this next series. Let's try not looking past the opponent that we have that we still have, but I'm kind of looking past them.
Oh, absolutely.
It's been a fun series.
It's fine to look past it because they suck, and it's over. So I expect them to win in four, at worst five, and if they go six, then Tibbs should be fired. After
you fire him
round.
Right then.
Yeah,
fire him after the first round. Fire him during the playoffs.
After they win the sixth game, just you're out of here. We're letting Nazir's going to be player coach. right,
well,
man.
I mean, you know, we didn't really touch on that, but for Bulls fans, you know, go out there, read the comments today about Tibbs. But, you know, it has been a shame that that has kind of been a big focus here in the game. You know, it's taken away something from the games, and I certainly have an issue with that. And Tibbs should come out and, I think, say some stuff, because as this stuff comes out in the media, I feel like it's important to not have the coach being a distraction from the team. But obviously Tibbs doesn't feel the same way. But anyhow.
It's not a distraction. Don't worry about it. It's ridiculous, you know, that's even being talked about now. But I guarantee you, when Mike Dunleavy raises for his three-pointer, the last thing he's thinking about is Tibbs' future. That thing is the most overrated thing. That, you know, what's going to happen with our coach? I can guarantee you, when the guys are on the court playing, they don't even think twice about Tibbs' future. So don't worry about that, my man.
Well, the Eastern Conference Semis is right around the corner, Fred. And I hope to talk to you before then. But until next time, the
Maine Bulls. We got to do one after the next game, before the next series. Maine Bulls and basketball.
There's not a whole lot to say, though. I mean, at this point, we've done our analysis on this series. Like, whatever. Game. You'd like to see them come out and have Derek play well again. You know what I'm saying? And just see the same sorts of things occurring. But whatever. Like, you know, they're dead. That game three was your effort. Now you're as good as dead.
Okay. All right, my man.
All right, big guy, I'll talk to you.